This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest things that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all strange desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay, so if everyone's settled in, I'd like to say thank you for welcoming me today, and nice to be back again. As Doug pointed out, this is my what we call my tenth Rains retreat. So I think a lot of you would know what that means, but for those who don't, it means that I've been a fully ordained monk since 2009. So this is actually not a full 10 years as a fully ordained monk. This will be my 10th Rains retreat this year, which is how we count seniority. So we have our 3 months of chilling out and putting aside all of our work projects and a lot of our teaching jobs and stuff. So you'll hear more about that over the next sort of month. But come the end of July, we'll have our 3 month retreat period starting, and that'll be my 10th retreat as a fully ordained monk. So it's nice little milestone there. My parents were saying, it'd be nice to come along to the ceremony. I said, oh, sorry guys, it pretty much just ticks over, you know. there's no ceremony or anything. It's just I think I get a backrest, so that's the main difference now. If there's up there in the dinosaur, I'll have a cushion behind my back if the junior monks haven't taken them back to the hut. Small numbers today. I don't know if you all got put off by the weather, but that's okay, because we can just have a little intimate little group tonight. I think we'll hopefully see the boss here sometime soon. I probably shouldn't say anything, just in case, but I think Ajahn Brahm is hoping to be in next week, so that'd be good for them. But keep an eye out for that one, just in case. No promises. Yeah. So anyway, 10 years. So this is, I think I started teaching here after my fifth round. So after five rounds, you're a middle monk. So I've had a little bit of practice now, so it's getting a little bit easier, which is good. So as usual, today we'll start out with some meditation instructions. We'll have a guided meditation, and afterwards I might give a little talk. Some ideas I was thinking about, and also we'll have time for, there's always time for questions and answers afterwards as well, so you can ask away. And to start with, we're all here to learn a bit about meditation. Some of us are old hands and can probably teach me a few things, but I might come up with a few ideas. Something I thought I'd talk about a little bit tonight, which is perhaps not mentioned often, although Ajahn Brahm does talk about it, is the idea of preparing the meditation, like programming the mindfulness in the beginning, and also talking about what happens at the end of meditation as well as what happens in the middle, which is all the stuff that you're probably quite familiar with, like watching the breath or practicing metta or that sort of thing. So I was going to talk a little bit about before and after. Ajahn Brahm talks about the simile in the suttas, where there is this big castle. This is the Buddha's description. There's this big castle, and at the gate there is this this gatekeeper that only lets the good guys in and keeps all the bad guys out. Right. So this is kind of what a gatekeeper does. And this gatekeeper in the Buddha simile is this idea of mindfulness. So we know what we're trying to cultivate when we start the meditation, and we know the things that we're trying to let go of, the things that maybe make meditation a bit difficult. And unless you're fully enlightened, there's always going to be something that makes your meditation a bit difficult. And I found that it's very helpful to, at the very beginning of the meditation, to start with, just get comfortable and make sure that the body is in a reasonably comfortable position, no tight clothing, or, head to scratch, you can scratch. You might decide whether you want to sit in a chair, or sit on the floor, or sit on the couch. The couch is still looking pretty comfy there, so I might shift over. Nah, better not, I'll get in trouble. after the first couple of minutes and the body is sort of comfortable and settled down, you can leave it alone. What I find really useful is to think of just one thing that I really would like to let go of. Something doesn't necessarily have to be anything horrible or bad, but something that often comes up in the meditation, maybe something that's been coming up recently. Think of something. Like, for instance, maybe you have to go out and give a meditation talk. So, you're sitting in meditation, and while you're meditating, you're having all these wonderful ideas about what you're going to teach. So that just messes up the meditation completely, which defies the point. So, I can sit down and say to myself, all right, well, just for this period of meditation between now and the end of the meditation, I'm just going to let that idea be, that thing be. It's good to just think of one thing, because trying to let go of everything at the same time just doesn't work. But what I've noticed is that there's usually one thing that's good to let go of, and that's always going to be personal to each and every one of you. So there's this idea of like programming the mind, giving the gatekeeper instructions, keep these scallywags out. Once you've done that, then it's time to sort of settle down into the meditation proper, to your, the meat and the sandwich, if you like, or the veggie patty and the burger, if you you don't eat meat. I find that while I'm meditating, I don't I don't spend too much time worrying too much about the what I'm supposed to be doing, but instead just to cultivate the feelings of contentment and letting go, patience, just letting the mind just unwind. It's always good just to starting out when you're in the present, developing the present moment awareness, or as Ajahn Sajata says, the present. Maybe the moment is extraneous there, so to spend that time just just cultivating the contentment with whatever arises in the mind, and you to the meditation object will come up, and when it's good and ready, and as long as you put those sort of good instructions with the mind in the beginning, then things tend to go along quite smoothly. So it's really important. Once you've given the instructions to the mind, now it's time to stop giving instructions. So you don't have to spend the whole meditation telling the mind what to do, because as Ajahn Brahm says, it's a bit like, you know, if you tell the cabbie, turn left here, turn right there, you know, he knows where he's going. He's a cabbie. He knows what he's doing. So in this period, it's much more a emotional part of the meditation where you're just cultivating the a mind that relaxes, that just unwinds, and often enough just learns how to rest, because probably one of the biggest obstacles in our meditation can be just being quite tired and overstimulated and that sort of thing. Maybe a bit for a monk, and probably quite a lot for someone who's out there in the world, working and doing family stuff and all that sort of stuff. But once you get to the end of the meditation, and some people prefer to use a meditation timer. There's a wide variety of electronic devices and apps and all that sort of thing, but generally speaking, you know, you just have something that goes ding. And I find at the end of the meditation, this is the time, the best time to slouch, right? Okay, no, really, you really get to the end of the meditation, it's like, oh, it's all over. Ah. Oh. Fantastic. And just that's a really good time to contemplate the way you feel. You know, you just ask yourself, how do I feel? After putting in the effort for 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever you want to sit for, I find it's really good just to before you do anything else, is just to just enjoy that feeling at the end of the meditation. And actually, sometimes you find that a very sore body, or just aches and pains, that sort of thing, can turn into a very relaxed, comfortable body, and a mind that was very worked up has actually and calmed down, has let go. And just to observe those things, those qualities at the end of the meditation is very very helpful, and that sort of can give you a bit of feedback for the next time you sit down. You'll know what baddies to tell the gatekeeper about, right? So these are sort of the the bun around the sandwich, or if you like. Also, this is also the time to sort of consider, what worked and what didn't. Was there anything special about meditation? Something you've experienced that you haven't experienced before, whether good or bad, and to maybe ask yourself the question, what is the cause for these good qualities to arise? You'll find when I'm giving the guided meditation, I don't spend a lot of time sort of saying, just watch the breath, or to do this or that, but more just to relax and unwind. And I think last year I had a whole weekend retreat where we just talked about relaxation, and people were so chilled out, they were sunbathing next to the stupa on the grass. I didn't have the heart to tell them off, so. Or just chilling out. So, with a few instructions in mind, if we've got a bit of time, we'll do it Ajahn Jaya style, soon to be Ajahn Jaya style. But you get, obviously a lot of you have been here many times, and you're aware that everyone sort of has a different take on teaching meditation. If you haven't come before, definitely a good idea to come a few sessions, because we have a different monk each week, and so it gives you a bit of variety and a bit of inspiration, hopefully, because I think everyone's got something to teach, I think. Sort of covered what I wanted to say about the meditation instructions. So before we start, are there any sort of just questions specifically on the meditation practice? Afterwards, we'll have a little bit of a bit more of a sort of I'll be talking about some other stuff, not necessarily meditation, but we can talk about that sort of stuff. But if there's any questions about meditation to begin with, feel free to ask. If there isn't, I think maybe we'll get an early start on the meditation. We might maybe have a bit of a longer session afterwards, eh? And I think we might even miss out on the 8 o'clock reminder to get out, so. Which we are to ignore, of course. So, as I was saying before, best place to start is with the meditation posture, to clear your throat, to scratch, to loosen any tight clothing, and it's time to relax, time to chill. So just give your body a little bit of attention now, and just make sure it's nice and relaxed. You can sit comfortably for about 30 minutes. Anything in your practice that you find difficult, now's the time just to tell the gatekeeper, you know, to yourself quietly, to it silently, in your mind, you know, just keep an eye out for that thing, and if it comes up, I'll just let it be, don't have to do anything. Remember the the reason we're here is pretty much just to unwind, just relax. And to rest, especially the body. Just rest the body, you can let it go. And the most relaxing place is here now. There's no thought of the future, no thought of the past, but it's as relaxing as what's here and now is present. Just remember to meet whatever enters the mind with contentment. Whatever comes into your mind, this is good enough. And thinking and all that restlessness is just the normal state of mind before you start meditating. Meet it with contentment. It all just settles down. You can relax and unwind. whatever comes into the mind. Treat it with kindness. Notice that feeling of well-wishing. with the hum of the city around you, just appreciate this nice quiet space we've made. Lots of empty chairs today, heaps of space for every one of us. Just chill. Cultivate that sense of acceptance with whatever's happening here and now. All the imperfections. Long, slow process of unwinding, very, very slow, but perceptible. Notice how the mind becomes more still. Little by little. I'll just take a couple of minutes to just ask yourself, how do I feel? You don't have to answer with words. Just to pay attention to where you are now. Do you feel more relaxed? Do you feel rested? Maybe look to the causes of those things. Okay, I'm going to ring the bell 3 times now. On the 3rd ring, you can slouch. Good. Thanks for that. Always take your time to.
There's one little question.
Sure, no problem.
Question box. Sure.
Yep. Good. Good. Yeah. Take a few moments. Just brighten up a little while. Bit of an art form to hold the microphone while you're meditating without tapping it. I learned that the hard way when I did my weekend retreat. I got told off. All right, so we have a question. So I was going to give a little bit of a talk today, but I think we can start with the question that was asked. So
Are you doing questions from the audience first?
I'll do this one first, then I'll give a little bit of a talk about what I was planning to talk about, and then we can have a Q&A afterwards. We've got a bit of time now, which is good. Okay, so someone has asked whether meditation can help with insomnia and fatigue. Right, okay, well they're definitely linked together, aren't they? Because if you don't get enough sleep, you have fatigue. And that's what I try and... A lot of what I do in my own practice is to sometimes when I sit down, I know that I'm actually really tired. I might even be on the brink of a headache or that sort of thing, and definitely with practice, yeah, you can see that the body does need rest, and just to sit comfortably without much going on in the mind is actually quite restful. It is a way of bringing peace to the mind. And also when you're falling asleep, it's a good trick to. Just to sort of unwind in the same sort of way you'd meditate, but not really to sitting there washing your breath, that sort of thing, but just being patient and waiting for sleep to come on, I think is a good practice. To recognise the mind and body needs rest and to allow it. And also have that sort of kindness as well. So, if you're not feeling sleepy and you're just lying in bed and sleep's not coming easily, then definitely it's a good idea just to have a little bit of method there and say, well, you know, even if I don't fall asleep immediately, I can just sort of relax here in my nice comfortable bed. It's nice and warm when it's cold outside, or it's it's just a comfortable place. So it's quite similar to the practice of meditation, just to sit there and just let things be, really. I hope that helps. I think definitely practicing, keeping up the practice of meditation and giving yourself the time to rest, and also knowing how to rest without, even if you're not actually asleep, can be really very, very effective. Okay, I hope that answers it, but your mileage may vary. Just let me have a look at my notes, because Rachel Green, who used to run the group here. I'd love to catch up with her sometime. She's always got a good sparkle. But she did tell me that although, like in the tradition of Ajahn Chah, so Ajahn Chah was Ajahn Brahm's teacher, and Ajahn Brahm was my teacher. In the tradition of Ajahn Chah, it was always that monks would give a talk without any preparation at all. They'd just start talking and go on and on, sometimes for hours. So Rachel said, no, please do some preparation. So I spent a little bit of time making some notes. I don't think I need to follow them too much. I decided to sort of sit down and take the middle way and just spend 10 minutes writing down a few ideas. And what's been of interest to me lately is this this idea of tudong. So this is a Thai word, the Thai word tudong. It comes from the Pali dutanga, and the dutanga practices are sort of like these austere practices that some monks like to take on, but especially in the Thai forest tradition, is this idea of tudong, which is like just going wandering. And this all dates back to the time of the Buddha. You know, there'd be this story. There's often a background story before the meat of the sutta, where the Buddha gives some very good instructions or some very deep wisdom. But often it says, the Buddha is just wandering with a group of monks, going from this place to that place by stages. So he'd be wandering around certain parts of India in that time, and he'd just go from town to town and village to village, and he'd teach. He'd give teachings in all these different places, but he was always moving around. Even in the Parinibbana Sutta, where it talks of the last days of the Buddha's life, he's still wandering around, and he was pretty sick as well. He's this 80-year-old man, and he might be enlightened, but he's still got this old human body to deal with. And he kept traveling, and this is a practice that fast forward to say, 1920s and 1940s in Thailand, there was a teacher called Ajahn Mun, and he's the most famous one. He's the one that there's a lot recorded about. Ajahn Mun was the teacher of Ajahn Chah, who was the teacher of Ajahn Brahm, which is the teacher of me, and he was a how would you say, a reformist. So he saw the practices of the monks at that time, early 20th century, northeastern Thailand. This place is like lots of jungle, all this virgin jungle and wild animals, but you could walk from village to village, set up a little spot by in the jungle, or just a nice quiet spot and do meditation, that sort of thing. But also to get away from some of the village practices where, they handle money. They might even... I read this great story. Obviously, monks can't kill animals. Well, it might not be obvious, but it is the case. So the novice monks have their precept not to kill any animals. So one of these village monasteries, these village temples, that asked the novices to disrobe and go down to the river and start fishing. And they'd bring the fish back to the monastery, cook them up, and then they'd ordain again as novices. So the practices at this time in northeastern Thailand, and probably parts of Laos as well, across the Mekong, was sort of very... it had sort of fallen back a fair bit from the Buddha's standards. So Ajahn Mun decided to, and probably quite a lot of other monks that never got written about, but Ajahn Mun went out there, and he was keeping good the vinaya, which is the monk's rules. He was wearing rag robes, and he was very, 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 very strict, very austere monk, and but also a fantastic meditator and a fantastic teacher as well. So he passed on this training through to not just Ajahn Chah, but many, many other monks like Ajahn Mahabua, Ajahn Tate, and it's fascinating to read their biographies. They're still available. I don't know what we have in the library here. And there's the autobiography of a forest monk by Ajahn Tate. Just tells the story of this young man, you know, in the sort of 1940s, just wandering around, going to all these different places. And it sounds like he had a great time, you know. Sometimes he'd be hanging out up in the highlands with the villagers there, and he'd be doing walking meditation. I don't know if any of you, some of you would be familiar with walking meditation. We don't often bring it up here, but anyway. Yeah, so he'd be walking back and forth very slowly with meditation, and the villagers would be walking along with him. That's a wonderful story, isn't it? And yeah, and Ajahn Chah as well. He ran into Ajahn Mun in the forest, and it was said that he was only with Ajahn Mun for a very, very short time, but picked up some very, very deep wisdom as well. So so that was Thailand in the 1920s, 1940s, and then a lot of these monks settled down, and Ajahn Chah set up Wat Pa Pong. So that's a monastery that still exists, even though Ajahn Chah died back in the 90s. Great forest master, and Ajahn Brahm, my teacher, was staying at this monastery, and also Wat Pa Nanachat, which was there for the all these new Farung monks, you know, these Westerners who decided to come and check out this monastery. And Ajahn Chah was, you know, he's a legend for bringing all these new teachers into the fold, and then sending them off wandering. So at that time, you could still wander in Thailand. You know, you can go out into the forest. I heard one story that I haven't heard anywhere else. This is from Bronwyn. She's actually at the monastery at the moment. I think Ajahn Chah took Ajahn Brahm and Ajahn Jagaro out into the forest and said, I'll be right back. And he was, 2 days later. They didn't even have a toothbrush between them. So Ajahn Chah left him out there in the forest, you know, nothing to brush their teeth with, nowhere to bathe really, except in the pools with the crocodiles and stuff. And anyway, it was all very it was great, yeah. But I mean, all that forest there just doesn't exist anymore. In fact, some of the remaining patches of forest are actually the monasteries. So they've kept the forest in their monastery, even though around them it's just like paddy fields and highways and stuff. So around the 80s, things change. So there's war across the border in Laos and Vietnam. There's all these Western monks that have turned up in what remained of the forests of northeastern Thailand, and there's still this practice of just travelling, going different places. And eventually what happened was that Ajahn Brahm came out and established Bodhnyana, which is just down the road. So he obviously didn't walk from Thailand or hop on a canoe or anything, but actually I don't think we're allowed to. I'm not sure if the monks allow us to get in canoes, but anyway. so Ajahn Brahm came out here. We've got Ajahn Sumedho and Ajahn Suchito setting up places in England. Ajahn Amaro, Ajahn Pasano going to the US and setting up shop in Oregon. And people started to move around, especially the Westerners. They'd go from... They might be staying with Ajahn Pasano, they might go and stay with Ajahn Sumedho, and there's still this tradition of going from place to place. And now at Bodhnyana Monastery, we have a very big problem. The good problem to have is that we've got too many monks. So Ajahn Brahm's set us down for, well, we have our meeting every 2 weeks, every 14 or 15 days, generally in sync with the lunar cycle. And after our recitation of the monastic rules, we have a chat. We vote on some subjects or some issues, whether we do things this way or that way. But also, we've been trying to build huts, some more huts, because we've got we've got about 20 huts, but we seem to have a lot more than 20 monks. I don't know where we put them all. And it's becoming more and more difficult to get things built according to Australian standards, especially dealing with bushfires and that sort of thing. So, Ajahn Brahma's basically said, you know, well, in this monastery we've got what we call the junior monks, the those who are novices or not yet five range retreats. So I explained at the beginning of this session that I'm coming up to my 10th range retreat. So after five range retreat, you're considered a Majjhima monk, which is a middle monk, and after 10 reigns you're a Tera or an elder. And Ajahn Brahm says, well, you know, the junior monks, they're basically like the apprentices. Okay, so with an analogy to Europe, you know, in the old days, in the medieval days, and when you know, you'd go and you'd work at a forge, and you just work really hard to look after the master craftsman there, and you know, learn your trade. And he says, yeah, and these middle monks, they're like the journeymen. You know, you go from, you know, we go here and go there, you get paid your day's wage, and you know what you're doing. And then, you know, you senior monks, yeah, there's, you got your 10 reins, it's, you're like the master craftsman, you know, so maybe think about going off and, you know, getting your own forge, yeah, so, yeah, that's what I thought, like, what? So, you know, in a sense, yes, Ajahn Brahm is trying to kick us out. So that's sort of where I've come across this, where I came up with the idea of Tudong. So yeah, after my fifth reign, I was very good. I managed to be very I managed to sit tight for my, and this is not easy. You're looking at about 6 to 7 years of training to stay in the same monastery for all of this time and listen to all of the talks that Ajahn Brahm gives on a Wednesday night and all these range retreats, hours and hours of meditation and that sort of thing. And after five reigns, I was keen for this and travelling, and I spent, after my fifth reigns, I went for 3 months to Wat Buddha Dharma, which is a lovely monastery in the middle of nowhere. It's actually in the middle of Darug National Park, north of the Hawkesbury River, north of Wiseman's Ferry in Sydney. And it's a beautiful forested area there. I spent 3 months there. And then came back to Bodhnyana for a few months and went off to Sri Lanka. So I spent 4 months in Sri Lanka. That was really good. You know, very different culturally. Although I found the teachings, they're very similar there. So it was very encouraging. I made some good friends. I came back, spent another year at Wat Buddha Dharma. But I've been back at the monastery. I was back at the monastery for a couple of years. Did 3 months in Newbury, which is a new monastery starting up in Victoria, which is about you know, Victoria is, but the monastery in Victoria is about an hour and a half from Melbourne. It's in the southern. It's in the Central Highlands there, which is I don't know. No one really knows about the Central Highlands. It's a bump in the middle between Melbourne, Bendigo and Ballarat. So you're up to about 800 metres there, so it's very, very cold. You get snow up there sometimes. And our big plan there is to, and this is being organised by the Buddhist Society of Victoria with funds raised, Ajahn Brahm's helped raise quite a lot of funds for them. He's also the spiritual advisor to the BSV. So they're starting to put in new kutis there. The existing buildings there are sort of a lodge style motel there where they used to, the VSV would do their retreats, and there's I think this rains there'll be 9 nuns there and maybe just 1 monk. So we've put in some 3 new kutis there, 3 new huts, which are actually just mining dongas. And the next project is to put in to start with 4 kutis up on the top of the hill. Beautiful when the sun comes out, lovely up there. They'll be very warm with in-floor heating, and they'll have double glazing and their own bathroom, so you don't have to go out into the snow if you need to, whatever. So, and that, and there'll also be a nice sangha house there, which is sort of a building where the monks can come and have some food, and there'll be a hall there and a place to sew robes and keep stores and all that sort of stuff. So there's a big building project there. So so we're just looking for places to sort of ship off all of these senior monks now. And we are building things up. And another thing that's happening is up on Scott Road, which way is it, that way? Up there, up on the hill anyway, just above Brookton Highway, there's the Cambodian temple there. They have one Cambodian monk there, who's at the moment, he's actually in Vietnam, I think, at the moment. His grandma is sick, so he's gone back to Asia for a little while. But during the rains retreat, we'll have Rajan Santuti and Venerable Kasava, two of our monks. Actually, Kasava's quite a junior monk, so I don't know what he's doing yet, going off. But Santuti is my very good friend. He's got 14 rains, so he's looking to take that over for the rains. And hopefully, myself and Ajahn Santuti might be leaving Bodhnyana, not forever, hopefully, I'd like to come back sometime, but to go and look after the Cambodian temple for a while, and just give up our kuti and just go and see what happens. You know, we might be there for a year, might be there for a couple of years, we might... once the building project's finished with building projects are never finished, but when the next stage of the building project at Newbury's done, we might go spend some time over there. There's a very nice monk in the Tibetan tradition called Lama Chimi, not Jimmy, but it's Chimi, and he's got a nice little place down at Ballingup. And he's invited some of the monks to come and spend some time down there. We've also been looking around for properties around Albany as well, so we've been doing all sorts of investigations to figure out what to do with all these senior monks. So this idea of Tudong is actually still very valid in the modern age, and I think what it comes down to is just the natural progression of a monastery becoming more mature, and because Ajahn Brahm is such a great teacher, and because we've been supported so well by the laity, we have so many monks to look after now. So many people who'd like to become monks. So, you know, I figure I'm more than happy at Bodhnyana, but I think, you know, it'd be nice for yet another person to come in and spend some time learning the Dharma from Ajahn Brahm, and I know they'll benefit from that. So it's a bit of a and the other side of things is, you know, don't get too attached, even to a place like Bodhnyana. So there you go. That was just my little talk. So you're welcome to ask any questions you like.
I was going to ask you about
that. Please.
Like, you've been up there all those years and you've got your duty and all that stuff. It wouldn't be difficult to become attached to it, would it? You've got to go, give it up and you won't get that back.
It's not easy, no. At least we had the practice in the monastery. It used to be the rule, up to 10 rains, you had to change kutis every 2 years.
Yeah.
So you'd never get... You'd never spend too much time in any one particular hut, even though some are more comfortable than others. Some have a really good view of the plains. Some are sort of a little bit cooler than others. Some have, some have lots of sun. And but you move around. We do move the monks around. I guess, we get supported so well there. I mean, I've stayed in a few monasteries now, and the food is incomparable, I think. I mean, of any forest monastery, I mean, these people come to the monastery every day, and they feed us fantastic food. And I have to say that, when you're out at a place like Newbury, you know, you don't have that support. You don't have people coming every day, so sometimes it's yesterday's leftovers, you know. I think physically it can be a bit more difficult. Yeah, you don't have the comforts there.
There's probably a learning in that, isn't there? When you build a new monastery, you just think, how far have the people got to bring the food?
Exactly, yeah indeed.
The further away you are, obviously you're going to get this issue.
Yeah, well that came up today, because Ajahn Brahm, being the... you can always trust Ajahn Brahm to look after his monks. Tuesdays. Well, exactly. Today is Tuesday, so we have a lot of the tithes. We have a group of tithes, but I mean, there's tithes there every day. There is a group that comes on a Tuesday, and they always bring fantastic food. Mm. And Ajahn Brahm said, some of our monks might be at Cambodian Temple. We just call it Cambodia for short. Cambodian Temple for the rains. Like, oh, okay. Do you know who? Oh. Santuti, and they're like, oh wow, okay, because everyone loves Santuti. And some of them even said that, you know, well, it's so much easier, you know, it's just the back of Armidale. It's much easier to come to, rather than it's still a good half an hour down the road down Southwest Highway if you want to come to the monastery. So for some people it is actually easier, I think, to...
It's quite an obligation to drive up to.
And every Tuesday, you know, week after week, year after year. So some of them said, yeah, that'd be great, they'll just drop in there. And there's not going to be a lot of monks there, maybe three at most if the Cambodian monk comes back. So, they won't need, you know, piles and piles of food. One pot of curry is probably enough for everyone. Yeah.
Do you have rules about attachment? You're not allowed to become attached to things? Is that part of your teaching?
It's not so much you're not allowed to be attached to things. It's just that the rules and the instructions, if followed properly, will lead you to letting go of attachment. It's usually just... it's often little things. I mean, we don't have fancy clothes. I mean, these are just old robes. I've had this robe for 3 or 4 years, and you know, there's nothing special about them. I'm not wearing Gucci or anything. The food's good, but you know, you've got to have that just contentment. Whatever they bring on the day, it's not always. You know, it's not always a banquet. I mean, 6 days out of 7. You don't have music, you don't have television, you don't have that sort of and after a while you find that the more you let go of, you know, the more happiness you have. obviously you need some of the basics, obviously if you're going to a place like Newbury, you might want a jumper. Definitely, you know, for those huts that they're building there, they're going to be very simple, but at the same time that they'll be warm. They will, you know, when it's snowing outside, you can sit inside and meditate, and you'll be comfortable, physically comfortable enough to sort of enjoy meditation. I think a place like Newbury will be good, especially for the range retreat when it's very, very chilly. Monks will be encouraged just to, you know, they don't really need anything outside the hut, to spend the day meditating and get up each day, do the same thing, and yeah, it's a very, very simple life, I think.
What's your nearest town to Newbury?
Nearest town to Newbury, Trentham's about 10 minutes away. Daylesford's about 35 minutes away. Ballarat's to the north, Ballarat's about 40 kilometres north. Bendigo's 40 kilometres north, Ballarat's about 75 kilometres south-west. Yeah. It's just like a lump. There's not much Yeah, it's not really a place anyone, many people have heard about.
Mm.
But it is there, and it's good. It does need support as well.
Including
the
forest? It's national forest?
It's not actually... The huts themselves won't be in the forest. It's actually about... It's a large property, but most of it just fields, which is just grass, basically. But the huts will be spread around quite closely into the forest, as much as the fire regulations will allow. And maybe we'll just plant a few trees and shrubs here and there, just to make sure you've got a bit of screening. But they're it's very, very peaceful up there, even compared to Bodhinyana.
So is the land
donated to the mosque? Yeah, it belongs to the BSV, the Buddhist Society of Victoria.
Has it been purchased?
It has been purchased, yeah. The land has been purchased, and we're in the process of getting the plans through the council for the new building. Although we've got the mining government in. Hello!
I just thought
Peter.
I mentioned the interesting fact about Newbury Buddhist Monastery. It's actually it's got a whole town on it.
A whole town?
Yeah.
It's gone. Town's gone.
The town's gone.
They took it down.
They filmed the man from Snowy River on that property.
Yeah.
And there's an entire film set.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's all been torn down and turned into a big bonfire.
Oh.
It doesn't, you won't miss it, don't worry. No, there's one building remaining, actually, near the caretaker's cootie there. Oh, the caretaker's hut there. There's still one building remaining. Yeah. But... and there's a train now. I don't know how the train got there. I don't think it has anything to do with the building set, but like there's some tracks and they end on our property. and the main thing is it's surrounded by forest on all sides. So compared to Bodhinyana, there's much less sort of background noise you get from, like, Kingsbury Drive has a bit of traffic, and also Southwest Highway. It's a couple of kilometres away, but you still get a little bit of sound. You've got the trains in the distance, whereas at Newbury, you walk up to where the new huts will be built, and it's just so still up there, so peaceful. Yeah. So.
Oh,
sure. That's true, actually. Yeah, and that's something we need to consider in the future. I mean, obviously, the monks that are planning to go out and travel now, I think they're mostly fit, reasonably young people. I'm in my 40s now, but I'm fairly able. I'm not. I can handle the hills at Bodhinyana. But some monks are. They're getting old. I mean, we've got Frimala Pasma is 77. He's not going. He said he'll keep pushing the broom till he's 80, and then he'll reconsider. Yeah. So, I think in the end, we're probably going to have to look at some sort of option for the older monks. Someone's really relaxed.
The insomnia question, obviously.
Sorry, this idea of Qigong.
Qigong,
yeah. Yeah, Qigong. Do you have anything else apart from just wandering to do with, keeping the body mobile and grow?
It's more than likely.
Do you
have body to move? I mean, I wasn't there at the time, obviously. It must have been very good lifestyle. You know, a lot of these people were climbing up into the mountains, fighting caves, just trundling through the jungle. And I think, just being in touch with nature in that way as well.
Do you as well want to be, or do you tend to, do anything?
Yeah, sure. So the property I'm on is where Bodhinyana Monastery is. So if you go down Southwest Highway up and then up the hill, you've been up there. Yeah, so it's on the scarp there, right? So it's already just walking from my hut to the main area where we have various things, lunch and meetings and stuff. That's actually quite a energetic 10-minute walk, Our retreat centre across the road is the only place that has internet access, so that's I do that 4 mornings a week. That's probably a kilometre and a half walk there and back. Yeah.
It's just like walking from town to town.
Mm.
The monks did back in the day.
Mm.
Like that's going to look a journey,
We've got it in the...
Sort of like a meditation, maybe? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely, it's definitely a way to sort of, You do get into a sort of mind state when you're walking in the forest, and there's definitely plenty of places to do bushwalking around where we are. Actually went for a walk with my friend Sabuti, who's one of the novices, went for a walk all the way down to the bottom of the hill, where there's this creek, this beautiful little pool I hadn't seen before, so... it's always very, and then we jogged back up the hill. That was the most exercise I've had in a long time. We used to, in the past, we've done arms round to Serpentine. It's actually a good hour or two walk. I think usually by the time we finish, people are coming to the monastery, so I get a lift back. I did that a couple of times, so it hasn't been done for quite a while. Maybe for up in Scott Road, you know, would probably be. I don't know, how far would it be from... it'd probably still be a couple hours walk to get to the centre of town from Scott Road. They say it's 49 minutes to get to the hospital. I measured it, because to keep going all the way through to Armidale, that'd be a bit of a walk, but maybe I can work something out. It's not the same as it was in the old days, unfortunately.
Anybody got any more questions? Nope.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks, Doug. There you go. I'll hand the mic over.
Thank you very much, Venerable.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you very much for your talk and meditation tonight. And
yeah.
I hope you have a good rains. And when you see you next, Arjun Jayar.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.